Live, on air, online, and on the Highland Radio app. This is Highland Radio News.
Good evening, it's 5 o'clock. This is the evening news on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. In this bulletin, the Taoiseach says 1 million people should be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 by the end of the day. The HSE confirms that community pharmacists will start administering the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine to those over 50 next week. And the Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE says the virus is now moving to unvaccinated groups. A Donegal deputy believes the current micro-redress scheme can be overhauled rather than being thrown out completely, and €12.5 million in funding is announced for the development of Dunreary Military Fort and Museum. We'll hear from Minister Charlie McConnellogue and from Fáilte Ireland. Later in the bulletin, Oisin is here with sports news, and as it's a Thursday, we'll have farming news and views with Chris Ashmore coming up after the sport. All that to follow. But first, this evening, Gardaí have conducted 7 searches of properties in Donegal and Dublin as part of a 2-day cross-border investigation targeting organised illegal drug criminality linked to the INLA. The searches were conducted by Gardaí yesterday in Kerrykeel and Buncrana, and also in Finglas County, Dublin. It resulted in a number of electronic devices being seized. The search operation involved local detective and drug units, the special detective unit, the armed support unit and the Garda dog unit. Meanwhile, across the border, officers from the PSNI's Paramilitary Crime Task Force arrested 8 men and 1 woman in Derry and Limavady yesterday as part of this ongoing cross-border investigation. They were aged between 27 and 42. The woman has been released on street bail. All 8 men remain in custody at the moment. Suspected drugs and cash were seized in a number of related searches, and there are more details of that operation on our website, highlandradio.com. The Taoiseach says 1 million people should be vaccinated against COVID-19 by the end of the day. So far, over 3 million people have been given a dose of a jab. Micheál Martin says 70% of adults should be fully vaccinated against the virus by the end of July. DCU Professor Anthony Staines is a member of the Independent Scientific Advisory Group. He's welcoming the progress but says there is still a distance to go.
So it's a great step forward. I mean, every vaccination is progress, and 70% of adults is a great step forward. But until we get probably 80% of the population fully vaccinated, we are talking about a risk of outbreaks continuing.
Meanwhile, the HSE has confirmed that community pharmacists will begin administering the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine next week. The single-shot jabs will be given to people in the over 50 age group to complete the vaccination of that age cohort. The process gets underway from Monday, with more than 1,000 community pharmacists set to be involved. Details of those are to be published this evening on the HSE's website. Well, the HSE CEO Paul Reid says it's a significant step forward. He's urging those over 50 to register for a vaccine if they haven't done so already.
The initial commitment in the distribution of 60,000 vaccines, and they'll be distributed in boxes of 50 for each of the 1,000 pharmacies across the country who will be partaking in the campaign. Many people in this age bracket, 50 plus, are vulnerable to the virus, and we would strongly encourage anybody who hasn't come forward to come forward either through that process or indeed register with us on the portal.
In the past 2 weeks, more than 3 in 5 cases of COVID-19 were identified in people under the age of 35. The Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE, Dr. Colm Henry, says the virus has clearly moved to unvaccinated groups.
So 64% of cases in the last 2 weeks have been in those aged under 35. Only a very small proportion, 1.8%, were in those 65 and over. And this shows the huge protective impact of the vaccine program. It's virtually, it would be wrong to say it's wiping out, but it's leading to collapse in cases.
The HSE cyber attack continues to impact community health services in Donegal. The HSE says it's working with the National Cyber Security Centre and national and international experts in a bid to rectify the issue. Áine McGlinchey has more on the services affected.
Most community health services, such as disability, mental health, primary care and older people's services, are operating as normal, and people are advised to attend their appointment, with some delays expected due to the recent cyber attack. Audiology services are now operating, while ophthalmic appointments in Donegal are proceeding as normal. Community diagnostic services in Donegal are now operational, however, work is ongoing to clear a backlog. Letterkenny Sexual Health Clinic is up and running. Donegal Psychology online group sessions remain cancelled until further notice. COVID testing and vaccination is continuing as usual.
The Chief Medical Officer has denied there's resistance against the use of antigen testing for international travel. Politicians want Dr. Tony Holohan to appear before the Oireachtas Transport Committee to explain why PCR testing for international travel is being insisted upon. The committee yesterday heard evidence that an antigen test is more effective than a PCR test for travel. Well, speaking after receiving an honorary fellowship from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, Dr. Holohan said he would appear before the committee.
We pursue science and evidence, and that guides the advice that we give. We give the advice to the best of our ability in respect of every issue, driven by our interpretation of the science and evidence. And I'm happy to meet anybody and explain our position to anybody in the Oireachtas committee that wishes to hear it.
Other news, and a Donegal deputy believes the current micro-redress scheme can be overhauled rather than thrown out completely. Deputy Thomas Pringle says homeowners were encouraged to build big houses by the government and banks, and a redress scheme is necessary that recognises that fact. He told Greg Hughes on today's 9 till noon show that this is ultimately the fault of politicians.
I don't think you have to throw the scheme out to have a 100% redress scheme. Basically, the government can change the conditions of the existing scheme. I mean, a lot of the talk has been made over the last week or so about the fact that, you know, we can't afford to lose this scheme and to get a new scheme in place. You know, as a government, it can decide this.
Yeah.
And the government can change and amend this scheme to make it workable for the people. And that's what the people need, and that's what the people are demanding. And I think rightly so. The state picked up the full bill in the pie rate scheme in Dublin. Now, the difference in that is that they were all scheme houses, so each house had the same cost. So I think basically the bean counters in the department and the pen pushers could actually pick a figure and say that they knew that everything was going to cost this. But the difference in Donegal is because people built houses on their own land and stuff like that there, and some of the houses may be bigger that there, but that's because they had less cost in terms of buying sites and stuff like that there. And they were encouraged to do this, and they were encouraged to do this by the banks and by the government and by everybody else. And now the scheme has to recognise that. I mean, obviously the manufacturer was responsible in a large part for it, but they can't go through the courts or anything like that there. So the government has to step up to and accept their responsibility in relation to it. I think it comes down to a bean counter's image of how they can actually approximate the cost of it.
Permanent government decision, really, rather than the
elected
government?
Look, the permanent government can't make a decision. The impermanent government, or the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government, has to okay that decision. So ultimately it's a politician's fault, and the politicians will love to blame the permanent government, say, oh well, we couldn't do it because of the permanent government, or we couldn't do it because of Europe. But it's actually they couldn't do it because they didn't, and right, that's the reality of it.
And it was Deputy Thomas Pringle speaking on today's 9 till noon show. €12.5 million in funding has been announced for the development of Dunree Military Fort and Museum. Money from Fáilte Ireland will be backed with a 25% contribution from Donegal County Council. Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnellogue says the investment will see Fort Dunree become a must-visit location and help realise its full potential.
It will absolutely transform the facilities, and it's going to see significant improvements to the lower fort as well as developments of the upper fort, and additional car parking, as well as development of new walkways and pathways, and overall improvements of the buildings and the museum. So €12 million is a massive investment in the fort, and also in the tourism product of which is Donegal, because the fort really is a jewel in our crown. It's one that hasn't been utilised in the way to its full potential in the past.
Well, projects in Cavan, Dublin and Mayo are also being supported in a €73 million investment that Minister Catherine Martin says is the most significant ever undertaken by Fáilte Ireland. Up to 8,000 direct and indirect jobs are to be created nationally as a result. Fáilte Ireland's Mary Stack says the projects should come online in the next 2 to 3 years.
All of the projects have to go into development now, but we're hoping that over the next year or so, that we'll secure all of our planning permissions and our consents, and that we'll go into construction in the next 2 years. So we'd be hoping to bring these projects online over the next 2 to 3 years, bringing them obviously out to our visitors and to help the tourism sector obviously to recover from the last year or so as well.
The Foreign Affairs Minister says no one has presented a workable alternative to the Northern Ireland Brexit Protocol. It comes as US President Joe Biden warns British Prime Minister Boris Johnson not to let Brexit damage the Good Friday Agreement. Ahead of a meeting between the two leaders tomorrow, President Biden has backed the current protocol. Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney says there's a lack of alternatives being presented by the British side.
I don't think anybody has offered an alternative to the protocol that is any way viable, credible or can work. So this is a mechanism that can work with flexibility and pragmatism, but most importantly, with a partnership approach from both sides to make it work, as opposed to a standoff.
There are further calls for the threshold for eligibility for social housing to be increased. Concerns have been repeatedly raised that as a result of the low threshold, people can't access the County Council's social housing waiting list. A family must earn €30,000 or less in order to be eligible to apply. Councillor Micheál Colum-McLeod-Osburgh says this is compounding the housing crisis.
I think most people can see clearly that we are in an absolute crisis with the housing issue, from individuals to families, children who have been left homeless because of government policy. We have a situation where, for example, in my own constituency, where people can't even find a place to rent anymore. There's a whole crisis out there, and let's be very clear about this. This crisis is very deliberately caused by the government because of their policy. Their policy clearly favours the interest of the wealthy, those who have massive portfolio of houses and who are not releasing it to those who most need it.
Donegal County Council is being asked to put in a funding application for a village renewal project in Newton Cunningham. At this week's meeting of the Inishowen Municipal District, Councillor Paul Canning said because of a number of projects, including social housing and a new primary care centre, it hasn't been possible to carry out resurfacing and other improvement works in the village. Now, he says, with those projects nearing completion, it's time for an improvement scheme to be agreed.
The primary care centre will be completed by October, November. The new proposed chemist will be completed at the same time. All of our social housing now has been completed. We have two pedestrian crossings going to be finished within the village as well. So I'm asking that now the village renewal programme removes all of the telegraph poles, the overhead wire, because they are an eyesore and they are a blight to Newton Cunningham. And for us to move forward as a village, we need those poles removed, and I'm looking for an application to go into the council for that funding.
Sport on Highland, brought to you by Cash for Clubs at Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure, the new loyalty scheme that rewards your club every time you shop at michaelmurphysports.ie.
It's 5:15. We say good evening to Oisin Kelly.
Yeah, thanks, Don. We're going to start with soccer. Ange Postecoglou has become Celtic's new manager and has said it's one of the greatest honours in football. The Greek-born former Australian boss has been appointed on a 12-month rolling contract and joins from Japanese side Yokohama Marinos. He has a huge task in trying to regain the Scottish Premiership title from Rangers after finishing 25 points behind this season. Former Celtic defender Mark Wilson says he's optimistic for the future.
Postecoglou may not have been their first choice, or they may not have even heard him until a couple of weeks ago, but he's the man who's been charged with taking the club forward, and I think the fans will get behind him and support him in what is a critical time for Celtic going forward, a huge rebuild.
Jorginho Wilderman has joined Paris Saint-Germain on a free transfer from Liverpool, signing a 3.5-year deal with the League One club. Wunderman left Liverpool at the end of the season after opting not to sign an extension to his contract at Anfield and will now play under Mauricio Pochettino in France. Barcelona and Bayern Munich had both been trying to sign the midfielder, who will captain the Netherlands at this summer's European Championships. Well, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has defended their fans booing the Republic of Ireland players taking a knee. Ireland boss Stephen Kenny said it was incomprehensible that the home crowd protested against the anti-discrimination gesture ahead of the goal to draw in Budapest. Orban says he agrees with the supporters booing and claims the Irish players provoked them to do so with their actions. He added that he has no sympathy for this kneeling business and it has no place on a sports pitch. Russian Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova booked her place in the first Grand Slam of her career this afternoon. The 29-year-old beat Slovenian's Tamara Zenidek in straight sets 7-5, 6-3 in their last four encounter at the French Open. She will face the winner of Maria Sakkari of Greece and Czech player Barbara Krejcikova, who are playing the first set of their last four contests at Roland Garros. In golf, Waterford Seamus Power is 1 under par through 11 holes of his opening round at the Palento Championship in South Carolina. The lead is currently held by Doc Redman at 7 under. Patrick Harrington tees off shortly at 25 past 5 Irish time. It's the final event, of course, before the US Open next week. In rugby, Ulster pulled out of a deal to sign Fijian forward Lionel Nakawara. He had been due to move from Glasgow to Belfast this summer, but has been cancelled after he failed a medical examination. Former Racing player Nakarara had returned from a long-term knee injury back in January. Finally, just looking ahead to tonight here in Highland on the Score programme, I'll be looking at the league semi-finals this weekend for the men and women's sides from the Northwest, with county managers Declan Boner, Fergal Logan, Rory Gallagher and Maxie Kern joining me on the programme. The League of Ireland Premier Division resumes on Friday after the mid-season break. We'll get the thoughts of Ollie Horgan after their trip to Shamrock Rovers, and Kieran Harkin on Derry hosting Bohemians. Plus, Eamon McLaughlin takes a look at the weekend's cricket action with the start of the Northwest Senior League 40 over competition. That's all on the Score tonight, just after the 7 o'clock news. Donal.
Thank you very much indeed, Oisin. It's time for farming news and views now, and we say good evening to Chris Ashmore.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's edition of Farming News and Views here on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Tom Boyd, the PRO of the County Donegal Executive of the IFA, about a major rally being staged in Raphoe tomorrow. But first, the budget for the results-based environmental agri-pilot programme, known as REAP, is to more than double to over €20 million after 3,000 more spaces were approved by Brussels following a formal request by the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell-Ogue. Almost 5,000 farmers have so far been approved, with 458 from Donegal. Farmers can secure up to €12,600 across the 2 years of the scheme. Farmers in Donegal will be taking part in a rally in Raphoe tomorrow to highlight the importance of commercial farming to the rural economy. It's part of a nationwide series of rallies being staged around the country and organised by the IFA. Well, Tom Boyd is the PRO for the County Donegal Executive, and he's been telling me more about the background to the rally. Well, Tom, this rally essentially is highlighting a number of issues, and I suppose one of the main things you want to get across is just how important agriculture is to Ireland, and especially the rural economy, because the vast bulk of money being generated for Donegal farmers through their incomes is ultimately being spent in the local economy.
Yeah, yes, Chris, thanks for having us on here and just giving us the chance to get a wee bit out about tomorrow. Yeah, so this came about, as you said, from Dublin there. There was an emergency National Council meeting last week just after the breakdown and talks out in Brussels the week before. Just there was no agreement made on the new round of CAP. So this basically what we're looking at is money will be taken off the farmers on higher payments and given to those on lower payments. Now, although the IFA campaigned for the farmers on lower payments to get more money, taking it off those on higher payments isn't possibly the best way to go about it, because a lot of these men that are on the higher payments, farmers, are employing different people. You know, they have workers, and these people then, once they're without the, if their payments are reduced, they're going to be a knock-on effect. You know, give an example there, I was speaking to one man earlier today who will lose quite a significant amount if the convergence comes in. You know, he has two younger lads working for him full time, and then he employs a number of other staff in the busy season for contacting and that. But his point was that he'll have to let go of one of his permanent workers if his payments are cut, because he'll not be fit to keep three people, including himself, in the full time roles. You know, and these two he is working for him are both classed as smaller farmers, but by working for him, they were fit to gain had a bit of extra money to work alongside their own farm then. But he'll have to let one of them go, and then the knock-on effect will be that this is how it will affect smaller farmers too.
We don't know what way it's going to eventually pan out. One size doesn't fit all, and that's one of the issues, isn't it? It's difficult to accommodate everyone.
Yes, you know, it's always going to be an issue with the vast difference in land. You know, take from myself, I'm here in the west, and Carrick Finn to out in Manor Cunningham or down in Ishone, the vast difference in land. You know, and around us here, we have a lot of hill farmers up around by Mahry, Dunlow, down bloody Foreland, you know, who are on limited land, who can only run sheep or something similar. But then you go out to the better lands where they can run, grow grass a lot quicker, and then they're fit to graze more animals and more stock, you know. But to suit everybody, it's difficult. That's why, you know, the campaign is to reward everybody who's producing, whether they be producing with 300 ewes out in Ishone, or whether it be 100 ewes in Mahry. Everybody should be rewarded for what they do, whether it be through environmental schemes, through top-ups for carbon submission or whatever. You know, everybody needs to be rewarded for if they're actively farming. That's those that need the rewards. And getting as much money as possible from Brussels and not sending it back is one of the main things, you know, whether it be through schemes and that, where if the scheme isn't uptaken and then the money sent back, you know, we can't really go looking for more money because we haven't used up
and
all the rest.
That is a big point, because if money is not spent under a certain scheme, it goes back, it sends out the wrong signal. So it's important that we get things right in the short term, that the schemes are schemes that people will sign up to and will be able to implement.
I suppose there's a lot of talk at the minute around this new REIT pilot scheme, and it was massively oversubscribed, which is good to see, you know, because that's a good stepping stone for us to campaign. This is a 2-year scheme that just over 21 and 22, which will then bring us to hopefully the new cap in 2023. But by this being oversubscribed, you know, there's over 10,000 applicants nationally for it, and that was without those who are already in the glass scheme. This sends a message to Europe, you know, look, there was a lot of ones interested in that scheme. We need a bigger pot of money. But it sends a good signal back to the EU, you know, that we are willing to engage in these environmental schemes.
Now, this rally in Raphoe tomorrow, it's part of a nationwide series of rallies. The first number of rallies that have been organised by the IFA since the pandemic. What time are you expecting farmers to assemble, and what's going to happen tomorrow in Raphoe?
So the plan tomorrow for Raphoe is nationally all rallies will take place at 11 a.m. This is, well, there's two reasons. Was one reason was everybody wanted the whole lot to happen at the same time to make a bigger stand. But secondly was just to avoid any congestion in towns with the Leaving Cert exam starting in the morning time. You know, we didn't want to do it in the morning. We didn't want to do it in the afternoon where you have to change over in exams. So that's why we went for 11 a.m. The plan for Raphoe is we picked Raphoe just because it's more of a farm-based town in the county and it's central with good access. Then we are assembling at Raphoe Mart there. Anne Harkin, the manager, kindly allowed us all to assemble in the car park at the Mart. So we're assembling there from 10. There'll be posters and everything available to tie on the side of vehicles, trailers, tractors, whatever anybody brings. People are allowed to walk. Initially, they weren't sure if we were allowed to walk or hold the march, but they were allowed for up to 100 people to walk in front of the cavalcade. At the start, there was a lot of negativity around it. You know, this is just for the big farmer. We're trying to stand up for the big farmer in this rally. But as I explained earlier on there, the effect from the big farmer losing money will fall onto the small farmer. And the campaign is, you know, to try and keep everybody that's actively farming in some sort of payments.
Absolutely. And there was that recent Chagas National Farm Survey which found that only 1/3 of farmers in Ireland are viable. So absolutely vital for so many who are sort of on that borderline of whether to stay in farming or not. You know, these supports can count for so much.
Oh, definitely. You know, whether it be the small supports or big supports, you know, every penny counts. You know, at the end of the day, these supports were brought in back in the early 90s so the farmer will produce cheaper food for the consumer. You know, that's they originally were brought in as a cheap food support, so we don't get the market price off them. You know, the price the farmer gets compared to the price it sells in the shop is massively different. You know, if these payments were to collapse, the only two things that could happen is that the farm wouldn't be viable, or the farmer would need to be getting at least double or 2.5 times the price for his stock, which would increase the price on the shelf in the shop.
And also, Tom, you've been involved now as PRO for the County Donegal Executive. It's been an interesting year. Of course, the County Executive meetings and other meetings have gone online, and this has presented challenges. But on a positive note, there's a lot of farmers out there now who have learnt how to use the technology.
Yeah, so I suppose that's one good thing that's come out of from COVID is, you know, back last, whenever the lockdown came in last March, we had to move to online meetings. And I remember one of the first meetings, you know, it was, you had the option of phoning in or you can do the video on the computer. In the start, it was everybody just rang in because they hadn't a clue. And as the months progressed, we kind of, more and more people were coming on the video. We had quite a few older members who weren't that able to drive at night time, you know, to the meetings, because usually the meetings would take place in the Clanry there. Start at 8 and it could go on to 11 or 12, but the older generation weren't that keen on driving in the dark, so now they're fit to engage in the meetings. If they go on to 11 o'clock, it's fine. They're sitting in their armchair in the house. It's safer for them as an older generation to travel to the meetings. And then we've also had some people who are away with work or whatever, and they can engage in the meetings from anywhere in the world, really.
And that was Tom Boyd, the PRO of the County Donegal Executive of the IFA. And finally, in other news, Chagosk is supporting Men's Health Week, which runs from next Monday to Sunday. Research indicates that farmers give health issues less attention than they should. Chagosk Health and Safety Specialist Dr. John McNamara says that Men's Health Week is a great time to kickstart a personal health initiative. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Farming News and Views. As always, many thanks for listening. Until next week, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris. Well, it'll stay mostly dry and cloudy for a time, but outbreaks of rain and drizzle will push into western parts of the region during the evening. Tonight it'll be mild and mostly cloudy. Outbreaks of rain and drizzle spreading eastwards across the region. Some mist and fog patches developing as well, mainly on hills and in coastal areas. The rain and drizzle will gradually clear toward morning in lowest overnight temperatures of 11 to 14 degrees Celsius, moderate south to southwest winds. Tomorrow will start mostly cloudy with a few patches of light rain. It'll become mainly dry during the morning and brighten up with some good sunny spells developing. Highest temperatures tomorrow 15 to 19 degrees Celsius in moderate to fresh westerly winds. Main stories in brief. And Gardaí have conducted 7 searches of properties in Donegal and Dublin as part of a 2-day cross-border investigation targeting organised illegal drug criminality linked to the INLA. Searches took place yesterday in Kerrykeel and Buncrana. A number of electronic devices were seized. Meanwhile, across the border, officers from the PSNI carried out searches in Derry and Limavady. 8 people arrested. 8 men and 1 woman, aged between 27 and 42. The woman's been released on street bail. All 8 men remain in custody. Suspected drugs and cash were seized. More details on highlandradio.com. The Taoiseach says 1 million people should be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 by the end of the day. And there are traffic delays in the vicinity of Ballyar football pitch after a collision earlier. Emergency services are at the scene. It's not known if there are any injuries. Next news at 6. Good evening. The obituary notices for this Thursday evening, the 10th of June. The death has occurred of James Gallagher, Charman, Mahery, Dunlow. His remains will repose at Midlin's funeral home from 6 o'clock this evening, with rosary at 9, followed by removal to his late residence. Funeral mass on Saturday morning at 11 in St Cronus Church, Dunlow, with interment afterwards in Mahery Cemetery. House is strictly private to family and close friends only, please. Due to HSE and government guidelines, wake, funeral and interment are private to family and close friends only, please, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. The death has occurred of Kathleen Boyle, Burton Port. Her remains are reposing at her late residence. Funeral mass on Saturday morning at 11 in St Columbus Church Acres, with interment afterwards in Belcrich Cemetery. Due to HSC and government guidelines, wake, funeral and interment are private to family and close friends only, please, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. And the death has taken place of Hughie McGinley, formerly of Muckish Terrace, Creasla. His remains will repose at St Michael's Church, Creasla, from 7 o'clock this evening. Funeral mass tomorrow morning at 11, with burial afterwards in Doe Cemetery. Due to HSC and government guidelines, funeral and burial are private to family and close friends only, please, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. Mass can be viewed live on mcnmedia.tv/camera/St Michael's Church, Creasla.